जय राधा माधव कुंज बिहारी जय राधा माधव कुंज बिहारी गोपीजन वल्लभ गिरिवर धारी गोपीजन वल्लभ गिरिवर धारी शरनंदन व्रज जन रंजन शरनंदन व्रज जन रंजन जमुना तीरा वनचारी मुनतीरा वनचारी जय राधा माधव कुंज बिहारी जय राधा माधव कुंज बिहारी जय गोपीजन वल्लभ गिरिवर धारी गोपीजन वल्लभ गिरिवर धारी शरनंदन व्रज जन रंजन शरनंदन व्रज जन
Vedanta Swami Raj Prabhupada ki jai. Jai Om Vishnupad Paramahansa Paribraja Kacharja Ashto Tirtha Sri Srimad Bhakti Siddhanta Saraswati Goswami Raj Prabhupada ki jai. Ananta Koti Vaishnavinda ki jai. Nama Charja Sridharidas Thakur ki jai. Prem Sikaho Shri Krishna Chaitanya Prabhu Nityananda Sri Advaita Gadadhar Shivasadi Gaur Bhakta Bindaki Jai. Sri Sri Radha Krishna Gopinath Sham Kundaradha Kundigiri Govardhan Ki Jai. Vrindavan Dham Ki Jai. Nabadeep Dham Ki Jai. Jagannath Puri Ki Jai. Gangamayi Ki Jai. Jamanamayi Ki Jai. Tulsi Devi Ki Jai. Bhakti Devi Ki Jai. Samaveta Bhakta Bindaki Jai. All glories to the assembled devotees. All glories to the assembled devotees. All glories to the assembled devotees. Gaur Premanande. Thank you all very much for coming. This is a wonderful opportunity for each of us to check our cell phone and make sure it's in silent mode. And this is Bhagavad Gita as it is, chapter 7, text 11. Balam Balavatam Chaham Kama Raga Vivarjitam Dharma Abhirudha Aviruddha Bhuteshu Kamosmi Paratarshabha Balam Balavatam Chaham Kamaraga Vivarjitam Dharma Viruddho Bhuteshu Kamosmi Paratarshabha. Balam strength. Balavatam, of the strong, cha, and, aham, I am, kama, passion, raga, and attachment, vivarjitam, devoid of, dharma, aviruddha, not against religious principles. Bhuteshu, in all beings. Kamaha, sex life. Asmi, I am. Bharata Arshabha, O Lord of the Bharatas. I am the strength of the strong, devoid of passion and desire. I am sex life, which is not contrary to religious principles. O Lord of the Bharatas, Arjuna. Purport. The strong man's strength should be applied to protect the weak, not for personal aggression. Similarly, sex life, according to religious principles, dharma, should be for the propagation of children, not otherwise. The responsibility of parents is then to make their offspring Krishna conscious. Om Ajnana Timirantasya Jnananjana Shalakaya Chakshurin Militam Jena Tasmai Shri Gurave Namaha. Shri Chaitanya Manobhistam Sthapitam Jena Bhutale Swayam Rupa Kadha Vaiham Tathati Shapadantikam. Bandeham Shri Guru Shri Jata Padakamalan Shri Gurun Vaishnavamscha Shri Rupam Shagrajatam Sahagana Gaganatan Vitam Stam Sajivam Sadvaitam Savadhutam Parijana Sahitam Krishna Chaitanya Devam Shri Radha Krishna Padam Sahagana Lalita Sri Vishakhan Vitam Stam Hey Krishna Karuna Sindho, Dinabandho Jagatpate Gopesha Gopika Kanta Radha Kanta Namostute Tapta Kamshana Gaurangi Radhe Vrindavaneshwari Vrishabhanu Sute Devi Pranamami Hari Priye Vansha Kalpitarubhyascha Kripa Sindho Vyaye Vacha Patitanam Pavanebhyo Vaishnavebhyo Namo Namaha Shri Krishna Chaitanya Prabhu Nityananda Shri Advaita Gadadhar Shri Vasadi Gaur Bhaktavinda Hare Krishna 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 Hare 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 Rama Hare Rama 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 Hare Hare Balam balabhatam chaham kama raga vivarjitam dharma virudho bhuteshu kamosmi bhadatarsha Adios. Are you really going to want to sit for a lecture for She was begging to see Krishna. That's a pretty good desire. You're happy to see Krishna and Prabhupada? Very good. In the previous verse, the Krishna had said, Bijam mam sarvabhutanam vidhi partha sanatanam. I'm the seed of everything. And in this, by the way, would you like to come closer? You're awfully far away. So much better. Hare Krishna. Okay. In this section of Bhagavad Gita, Krishna is making it known that he is present everywhere and in everything. And here, he's indicating some places where he's particularly present. Balam balavatam chaham. Balavatam, bala means strength. And balavatam are those who have strength. Especially the kshatriyas, the leaders of the state, are supposed to be powerful. There's no need of having a head of state who's a sissy or who has no power. He must be powerful in order to perform his duties, but that power should be kama raga vivarjitam. Kama means desire or passion, and raga means attachment. The head of state should use his power for the benefit of the state, for the benefit of the citizens, and not to satisfy his own whims or his own material desires. That's the duty of the kshatriya, or anyone who's powerful, but especially the kshatriyas or the heads of state, they should be powerful. But they shouldn't misuse their power. They shouldn't be slaves to their own passions. And give me that man who is not passion's slave, and I'll wear him in the core of my heart, in my heart of hearts. Give me that man who is not... That means everyone is passion's slave, generally. Instead of being ruled by our duty or ruled by higher consciousness, Krishna consciousness, we're ruled by our passions, by the mode of passion. Krishna sangha samudbhavam, desires, thirsts, and it gets at higher levels of responsibility or power, it becomes out of hand, or it becomes disproportionately huge. The small man has so many desires, but the big man has insatiable desires. Aneka chitta vibranta. What is that? In the 16th chapter. Asha pasha shatayar baddha kama krodha parayana. He's bound by chintama paramayamcha pralayantama pashrita kamopapoga parama itavaditi nishchita kama mashrita dushpuram dambamana madanvita mohad grihid vasad grahan pravartante shujivita. This is the description in the 16th chapter of demonic persons. Persons of gross, unlawful desire. Kama mashrita dushpuram. Just as the devotees take shelter of Krishna, such materialists take shelter of unlimited desires. Dushpura means desires that are very difficult to satisfy. They throw themselves into the business of sense gratification. Kama mashrita dushpuram dambamana madanvita. And they're bewildered by pride, by arrogance, by false prestige. Mohad grihit vasad grahan. Mohad, by illusion, grihitva, they're grasping. What are they grasping at? They're grasping at grihitva asad grahan, at something which has no existence. That which exists only temporarily. That which is matter. Sat means spirit, that which is eternal. And asat means matter, that which has no permanent existence. Like a dream has no permanent existence. You can grasp at whatever you want in your dream, but you can't hold on to it. So the gross materialists are mad after money, mad after enjoyment, mad after power, which they can't hold on to, and which will never satisfy them. It's not that they'll come to a point, now I have this much, I'm satisfied. More, we want more. And therefore, pravartante shuchi vrita, they flourish in dirty dealings. Asuchi vrita means that they're dedicated to dirty dealings. Because you can't get that level of sense gratification without dirty dealings. Chintama paramayamcha, pralayantam upashrita. Therefore, chinta means anxieties. It's not that their hearts are full of satisfaction and peace, because they've thrown themselves into this passionate desire to enjoy more and more. They're always in anxiety about, do I have enough? Can I get more? Is someone trying to take it away from me? Are they trying to kill me? Chintam aparameya means immeasurable anxieties. Pralayantam, up to the end of life. There's no end to it. Kamopa bhoga parama etavaditi nishchita. And what have they been able to ascertain about the goal of life? Parama, what's the highest goal in life? Kama upabhoga, sense gratification. To satisfy the senses is the highest purpose. Ask anyone, what's your highest goal in life? They won't say, in stereotypical language, well, to gratify my senses. But they'll say something like, well, to realize my full potential. Full potential for what? For sense gratification. To be the most I can be. Or they have various dreams and they'll specify what their dream is. But for sense gratification. Rarely will you find someone who says, well, my goal is to serve the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Sometimes. But those of demonic nature, they'll never say that. Or maybe they will if it'll get them elected. You know, I want to serve God in my country. Which means, elect me and I'll loot the treasury. So, kamopa bhoga parama, their highest goal is material enjoyment. Asha pasha shatayar bandha kama krodha parayana. They're full of desire and anger and bound up as if a person was bound up by thousands of ropes. Or we heard today that when people get wildly rowdy on airplanes, the flight crew restrains them with those plastic, like luggage ties, you know. So imagine a person bound with thousands of those ties. So people are bound up with thousands and thousands of desires. Asha pasha shataya bhata kama krodha parayam, same thing, lust and anger. Ihante kama bhogartam anya yena artha sanchaya. And so they're dedicated to the business of getting money by hook or by crook. And these are your leaders of society. Sometimes they get caught and there's a big scandal, how the head of this corporation or the head of this state got nabbed for this or that. And the rest of them, only they didn't get nabbed. So here, Lord Krishna says, I'm the strength of the strong, but kama raga vivarjitam. Without any kama, passion for material enjoyment, and without raga, raga means attachment. A man gets in office and you can't get him out. Attached. That's all. So, when we find a person who serves and uses his strength as a matter of duty for the protection of the people and to, yes, for the upliftment of society, then Krishna is there. He's that strength. Balam balavatam chaham kama raga vivarjitam dharma viruddho bhuteshu. Kamosmi Bharatarshana. And someone may say that chanting is spiritual and sex is material. But Krishna says, no. Sex is also a manifestation of me. I'm represented. I'm present in sex. Krishna is present in sex. But what kind of sex? Dharma aviruddha. Viruddha means, that's called viruddha, when you're supposed to have your cell phone off and it's on. That's viruddha. Viruddha means against the rules.
against the rules. And aviruddha means not against the rules. So dharma aviruddha means not against the principles of dharma. I went for an eye examination the other day, and they ask you a whole bunch of questions. Do you drink? Do you smoke? Do you do this? Do you do that? Do you take recreational drugs? No, 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 no. So as there's recreational drug use, there's recreational sex. That sex is for enjoyment. We do things for enjoyment. We eat, we go to movies, we smoke, we use drugs, we do this, we do that, we have sex. And that's what it's for. It's for recreation, for enjoyment, for fun, for pleasure. And Krishna says, no, that's not what it's for. That's not what it's for. It's for having good children. In the course of having good children, yes, there'll be fun. There'll be some pleasure. But that's not the point. That's not the point. According to Vedic culture, that it's a duty to have good children. Why did you get married? Marriage means that there should be husband and wife, children. Then why do we want to have children? Well, for enjoyment. We want them. We want to have kids. But that also is not the Vedic picture. That the kids are, you know, like toys. You know, when you're a little girl, you can have a doll, and when you grow up, you can have one of your own. That's not the idea. A kid is not another toy, another possession, another prize. Not that. The human life is the opportunity for freedom from material existence. Durlabha manava janma tadapi ajuva martyam, Prahlad Maharaj says. The human life gives the chance for getting free from material existence. Rarely is this human birth obtained. But when it is, we can use it for that very fortunate purpose. And how does one get this human form of life? Well, through the mother and father. So the purpose should be of sex, to have a good child. A good child. That should be the purpose. Why? So that he'll be the pride of, he or she will be the pride of the family? In one sense, yes. If the child becomes Krishna conscious, then the whole family can be proud. Chanakya Pandit says if there's one fragrant tree in the forest, the whole forest becomes fragrant. If there's one good child in the whole family becomes glorious. The whole family becomes glorious. So the goal should be, but it's not just for the glory of the parents, it's for the benefit of the child. The parents should bring into a child, into the world, a child who can use properly the opportunity for getting free from birth and death. In Srimad Bhagavatam it said, Gurur nasasyat, pitaro nasyat sasasyat, janani nasasyat. One shouldn't become a guru, one shouldn't become a father, one shouldn't become a mother, one shouldn't become king, unless one can free the person under one's charge from the clutches of birth and death. Namochiyet yasamupetyu mrityum. That should be the purpose. Otherwise, don't do it. It's not that one becomes a guru, so wow, now I had 12 disciples, now I've got 20, or I had 200, now I've got 300. I'm moving up. One shouldn't accept any disciples unless one is prepared to take the responsibility of delivering the disciples from birth and death. It's not that the guru is just a collector of adulation and donations. He's meant to take on that serious responsibility of delivering the disciple. Otherwise, he's a cheater. If he just wants more disciples for his own pride or pleasure or reputation, that's cheating. He's meant to deliver those disciples from birth and death. Similarly, to become a father is a great responsibility. One has to deliver that child from birth and death. To become a mother, same responsibility. To become a husband, to become a king. King is not just meant to sit on the throne and collect taxes. He has to act in such a way that his whole kingdom will be elevated spiritually. Or head of state, his whole state will be elevated. These are the duties. So, yeah, this is not working all that well. No. I can't think when there's somebody's in that. Doing that. My limitation, I apologize. So it's a matter of responsibility. In the present age, it's just become a matter of accident, practically speaking. Men and women get together and they have sex, and sometimes there's children. And then, who knows, maybe we kill it, maybe we kill it in the womb, or maybe we throw it somewhere. In some countries, they just throw the kid in the garbage can, literally. Or we throw him in an institution. Or we get married for our own enjoyment, and then we have some kids, and then we're not enjoying anymore, and we split up, and the kid is, you know, 2 days a week here, 4 days a week there. Because there's not a commitment to this ultimate purpose, that marriage is not meant for sense enjoyment, and when my sense enjoyment is down, then the deal is canceled. Parenthood is not meant for just getting a little bundle of joy for some time. Meant for to deliver the child from birth and death. Therefore, Srila Prabhupada explained the rules and regulations that the sex should be accepted in family life once in a month, not more than once in a month, at the time of maximum fertility. Because then there's the purpose can best be executed. That should be the standard. And no contraceptives. The contraceptive method in the Vedic culture is, if you don't want to have children, don't have sex. A straightforward method. These senses should be controlled. Kurmon Gani Visarabhasha. The tortoise is the example. The tortoise can extend its limbs when there's a need or retract them when there's a need. So the Krishna conscious person can use his senses when there's a need or control the senses, refrain from using them when there's a need. The Krishna conscious man, the Krishna conscious woman. Well, this is the principle. Dharma viruddha bhuteshu. Bhuteshu means in all living beings. But in other species, they always follow the regulative principles because they have no choice. The lion has sex at the appropriate time dictated by its nature, I think once in a year. The fish, all the living beings, whatever their business is. If he's a monkey, then a lot of monkey business. But the human beings are supposed to be guided by spiritual knowledge, by Vedic direction, by the direction of the spiritual master. These things are there. Actually, the principle is that the householder should first seek permission of the spiritual master, then have a child. Because it's meant to be service. Service to Krishna, and the spiritual master is Krishna's representative. Then after the child is there, there are so many duties, or there's such a great responsibility to raise the child so that the child becomes Krishna conscious. Now people take it that the great responsibility is to see that the child earns a livelihood and is materially well situated. That's a waste of the human form of life. Every dog gets its food without earning a postgraduate degree. The human life is specifically meant for spiritual realization. Adhyatma vidya vidyanam. Of all forms of education, Krishna says, I'm spiritual education. We won't discuss further about education tonight because our time is short. Maybe we'll stop here and see what kind of questions you might have. Yes.
Raj, I was just wondering if your book has been released.
You're wondering if my book has been released. Well, that's a welcome question. The answer is no, not yet. It's scheduled for release in September. It's called Vanity Karma. This is a quick print copy, sample copy. It's a commentary on the biblical book of Ecclesiastes from the point of view of Bhagavad Gita and Bhagavad Gita philosophy. So it's coming out in September. If you'd like to be on the mailing list for news of its release and so on, I should have a sign-up sheet, or else you can go to www.vanitykarma.com and sign yourself up, or come see me. I have the site on my phone, and you can just boom, boom, boom. It's actually, or on my laptop. Better if you sign up that way than on the sheet, because then it saves me a step, and wow, people's handwriting is incredible. Yes?
Could you tell us a little bit what it's about? Because I'm not familiar with that.
Well, I could tell you a little bit. The book of Ecclesiastes is a book of the Old Testament, and it opens its pleasing opening words are that everything is vanity. Vanity in the context of Ecclesiastes means meaninglessness, absurdity, uselessness. The Hebrew word means breath. A breath comes and on a cold day and disappears. And what substance does it have? What lasting value? What's the good of it? So the opening, the speaker of the book looks around him and says that he concludes that everything is of that nature. It's useless. Or another translation is absurd. It's supposed to mean something, but it doesn't. So absurd in that existentialist sense. He presents himself as a great king and says, I built houses and mansions, I planted trees, I had flocks of animals, I had so many wives, I had treasure, and I built up a great estate, greater than anyone who was before me. And then I looked at all I'd accomplished and all I'd gathered, and I said that it was vanity, it was useless. And so then I turned to wisdom. I said, I'll become wise. And so I did. I became wiser than all my predecessors. And what I saw was that this also was vanity. Because the more wisdom, the more vexation. Better when you're stupid, you don't see how vain the world is. These are his opening complaints. He raises important issues, deep issues, for relevant to everyone's life. And there is more to the book. It's 222 verses. But this theme keeps coming, keeps surfacing. What is the meaning of one's existence? And that's the theme that we address in Vanity Karma.
Is there like a combination of sadness and also comedy in that viewpoint? Or
when he's not very comic. He's sometimes a sort of absurd. Like the comedy of the absurd is not funny. It's tragic. So. I wouldn't call Ecclesiastes comic in any real sense, no. He does spring back to another side. He says, well, although everything is pointless, still God has given us a little measly enjoyment, so we should enjoy. And he's already found that it's useless, but he said, well, anyway, this is what we get, so we might as well enjoy it. And he goes, but everything is useless. So he's very two-sided, one would say bipolar, probably in these days. He goes back and forth. You can't really stay here and say, well, everything's meaningless, everything's, but you have to finally say, well, something means something. All right, there's a little enjoyment, let me go for that. But it's not satisfying, everything's meaningless. Goes back and forth. So there's this tension in the book between these two sides. And some commentators, they come down strong on his gospel of enjoyment, and he finally triumphantly says that God has given us this enjoyment and we should enjoy. And some commentators come down strongly on that side. Others come down strongly on the other side. But both threads are there in the book.
Does he not conclude in the end that just respect God and keep his commandments?
Does he conclude in the end that, doesn't he conclude in the end that one should respect God and keep his commandments? No, he doesn't.
Okay, so the person who taught me just must have said it.
What happens is there's a narrator who comes in the beginning and says, here's what the speaker had to say. And then he shows up at the end. After, actually, the speaker's ending words are vanity of vanities, all is vanity. He ends up where he started. And then the narrator comes and says, well, here's the conclusion of the whole story. And he puts those two bits in, along with a few words of praise. Well, Qohelet was quite a good sage, and he arranged a lot of proverbs. And one commentator said, as if after reading the Communist Manifesto, one would say, well, Karl Marx was quite a man, and he wrote the Communist Manifesto. He wrote some bad love poetry also. And anyway, let's get on with the show. He almost trivializes what his man has said. But anyway, that final message of, well, just fear God and obey his commandments, isn't what the speaker says, it's what the narrator says.
Mm-hmm. You say that there is a connection between the Bhagavad Gita and this commentary on Ecclesiastes. So what could you give us, what is your commentary from that point of view on the book of Ecclesiastes? You can give a summation, maybe?
In brief? Well, it's hard to give you a quick summation because Qohelet, the speaker, introduces many issues, and so there are many issues to look at from the point of view of the Bhagavad Gita. One thing we can say, I think by way of summary, one major point that we can make is that the speaker looks at it all within the framework of one life and says, you're born into this world, and you just do the same thing everybody else did before you, and you go round and round doing the same stuff, and it doesn't really mean anything, and then you die. And in the midst of it, all this injustice happens. The good things happen to the bad people. The bad things happen to the good people, not always, but often enough to spoil the soup. So, and it's painful, the things that happen to people in this world. So, it appears unjust. He's almost looking at God and say, you know, what kind of an establishment are you running here? So, looked at from within the framework of one life, it's almost an intractable, insolvable problem. How do you justify the way God runs this place when it's all within those strict boundaries? But when you bring in a perspective that accounts for multiple lifetimes, that allows for multiple lifetimes, well, then you have the chance for making sense of things. Things happen to people not for no reason, but on account of their previous activities. The cause and effect continues from lifetime to lifetime. And when you die, it's not like, well, that's that. And now we total up the sum, and whatever it is, that was your life. But now there's the future. Are you going around again for another pointless round? Are you making spiritual progress and being elevated? Or are you going back to Godhead, to the spiritual world? All of these opportunities are there because life doesn't end at the border. So that's a major finding and a major difference between the way the speaker looks at it and the way a reader of Bhagavad Gita would look at it. Okay. Mm-hmm.
In the beginning of describing the king's disparaging all of his works that he had done, accumulated, which is karma, and then he cultivated wisdom and saw the limitation of that, which is what we would call gyan.
Yes, exactly.
Is there some point in which there's a realization of bhakti?
The king says, I tried karma, it didn't work, tried gyan, it didn't work. does he try bhakti? Not really. Not really. He acknowledges the existence of God. He is certainly acknowledges the subservience of man to God. But his God is a very distant figure. His God is a very distant figure. And he never comes to the conclusion that, well, the purpose, the real purpose is found in devotional service to God. That's not inconsistent with his worldview, but it's not where he ends up. He doesn't say, now I found bhakti, and that explains, that makes sense of it all. No, he stops short of that. He's sort of trying, well, maybe I could try karma again. Maybe I could try again. No, it's useless. He never really reaches bhakti, so that's another major contribution, you can say, or point of the book. How fortunate are we, indeed.
Mm-hmm. You told that we are thinking too much, therefore we are moving ahead from God. So we are
say that again.
We are thinking too much about our future, so about our desires to fulfill. So therefore sometimes we are moving far from God.
We're thinking too much about our own desires to fulfill, and therefore we're moving away from God or Krishna.
But if we don't think, if we don't plan, because we don't know how our future is going to happen.
If we don't plan, we don't know what our future is going to happen. Then.
If we don't plan, then how we are going to secure our future?
Exactly. If you don't plan, how are you going to secure your future? Therefore, one should plan to serve Krishna. Otherwise, how are you going to secure your future? We think our future is, you know, the next 50 years or 100 years. That's short-term future. It's what they call in business short-term thinking. And we think 100 years is the long-term. No, 100 years is the short-term. Within this life, yes, I have to make some money. Yes, I need to have food on the table. I have some basic needs. But I'm thinking how to increase, how to have better food, how to have a bigger house, how to have more, you know, a VCR with a screen that's the size of the wall. That doesn't satisfy the real needs of human life. That's short-term planning. I need to give some attention to my immediate needs, but that's the small stuff. The big thing one should plan for is how to get out of this material world. How to go back to Godhead, how to serve Krishna. That we don't plan for. We plan for our education, we plan for our career, we plan for our marriage, we plan for our children's education, for their marriage. But we don't plan for how we're going to get out of this material world or how they're going to get out of this material world. And what do they say in the same sort of context? Failing to plan is planning to fail. And therefore, people's lives are a failure. Parabhavastavadabodajata yavanajigyasadamitam. Because they don't inquire about spiritual realization, the mission of their human life is spoiled. Their human life, however successful they may appear to be, is a failure. It's not that the man who has the most money or the highest post or the greatest record of community service is the most successful person. The truly successful person is the person who becomes Krishna conscious. That should be our plan. Is that okay? We have reached 7 o'clock. The plan is that it's now time for the RT. Yes? Yes. Thank you all very much. Hare Krishna. And those who are interested in the book and want to sign up or sign in can see me after.